So for Starbucks, the big win for them, Desmond, was they got access to customers that they wouldn't have had they not done the strategic relationship. For Barnes and Noble, you're pulling people in to your bookstore and getting customers you would not have had otherwise.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Campfire Capitalism. I am your host, Desmond Dixon, your sales mentor, international speaker, traveling the world, building sales teams. And I'm here today with a heavyweight all-star, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Dan Varone. What's up, Dan? Welcome to the campfire.
Thank you so much for having me,
Sweet.
Desmond.
So, hey, before we get into our conversation, because I'm really looking forward to this one, let me just warm up to the audience to like get to know like who you are real quick, and then we can dive right in. So let's just dive right in real quick. So Dan is an author actually of an amazing book that I highly recommend. He talks about a lot about reimagining industrial growth with strategic partnerships. He's the founder of Potomac Core, a strategic consulting firm that specializes in association transformation and industry-focused strategic partnership. He's built a successful career as an association executive, leading organizations with diverse focus from manufacturing to high tech to finance to advocacy. The man is a legend in the space, and I'm so glad to have him on the show. So, Dan, I mean, where are you calling in from today? Are you on the East Coast or on the West Coast? Where are you calling in from?
So, East Coast of the United States, I'm in the greater Washington, D.C. area, actually about 25 miles southwest of Washington, D.C.
Awesome. Yeah, so not too far away from the action, so to speak. So, yeah, so I'm pretty curious because I know when we talked a lot about like strategic partnerships and how you, really got to catalyze a lot of relationships in the industry. So I guess let's just dive in. How did you get started in the industry? And like, what were some of your early epiphanies being, you know, a capital allocator and a leader, an executive?
Sure. So I had a great career as an association executive. And the foundation of that career was 23 years at the National Association of Manufacturers. I got to work with a number of manufacturing companies. Manufacturing is pretty well spread out, diverse, and represents a lot of sectors of the U.S. economy and the global economy. And I got to learn a lot about manufacturing, manufacturing innovation, manufacturing workers, and the reach that it has around the world. So for me, when I opened up my company 11 years ago, it'll be 11 years this May, I was looking to do something different. I saw the world entering a period of chronic uncertainty. We had just come out of the Great Recession. Everybody's thinking had changed about everything. C-suites were smaller. People were looking to do things even faster than before. And technology was going to become even more important on the production side, as well as the distribution and delivery side. So I opened my company 11 years ago with the express purpose of coming up with a research foundation and a strategic foundation to help trade associations build strategic partnerships with industries in ways that would help them do the following. It would help them uncover those long-term challenges and then leverage the industry, leverage the trade association in a way that would help it position the industry for long-term growth. And it's been unbelievably and amazingly successful. I put some of those success stories in my book, Reimagining Industry Growth, which was released by Wiley Publishers a year ago last month. And I'm very, very excited about the possibilities that it brings.
Yeah, interesting. So we know that capitalism is about competition, right? In terms of, you know, competition drives innovation. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, the best product, the best service wins. Yeah. But you have also a very interesting philosophy around strategic partnerships. So just like explain to it, like, You know, one of the items first, so like, what do you characterize as a strategic partnership? And then like, how did you see strategic partnerships, you know, manifest amazing stories of success of collaboration? Yeah.
Sure. So I am a devout follower of capitalism, but what strategic partnerships are, so when I talk about strategic partnerships, these are relationships that align in a pre-competitive space. So there are rules and regulations that everybody and every company has to deal with in order to develop, design, and bring products to the marketplace. So what these strategic partnerships do is they help shape the environment. So look at it this way. Think of something like the recreational boating industry or the outdoor recreation industry, where they come together as a large entity, and they say, whatever affects one of us affects all of us. So if there's a regulation or a law coming down the line, if it's going to affect one of us, it's going to affect all of us. So if that's the case, what are we going to do to influence or to help shape whatever that law, that regulation is, in a way that will be beneficial for all of us? That's highly significant. So when you look at my book, it's the recreational boating industry, it's the baking industry, it's the unmanned systems industry, it's the asphalt pavement industry, and it's the frozen food industry. These are five industries that have built strategic partnerships with their trade associations in such a way that they've got the ability, actually the capacity, to shape laws and regulations in a way that benefits the entire industry and their workers.
Yeah, because obviously at the end of the day, it's the good old-fashioned jobs and quality of life that keeps, you know, the wheels of America turning. And I just finished George Zeehan's book about talks a lot about like how, you know, the globalization, how everything's so connected. And I was just so blown away to understand how high value the United States manufacturing systems are. Like the things that we produce in America are hard to replicate because we're so much farther ahead with the skill and the machines that make the machines. And it's super fascinating, like the edge that we have. And I feel like a lot of Americans are not aware of how awesome we are in terms of like manufacturing high quality goods. Cause we think China is, you know, taking all our jobs. But at the end of the day, like they're doing the things that we gave to them that we don't want to do because we moved up the value ladder in terms of in the supply chain and in the value creation. So, but, let's shift here because you said something really interesting about, the trade association, because at the end of the day, it sounds like, there needs to be some, you know, one thing I find very interesting about capitalism in the United States, this is all the way back from how property rights were created, is the government usually shapes the rules based off the social contracts already created, right? Like, and so it sounds like the industry, the people who are, or the capital allocators are help forming the social contracts with each other. And then the government's coming, okay, great. We're going to actually put boundaries here so that everyone, it's clear, right? It's written into the law, right? So I guess like, talk to me a little bit about like how some of these strategic partnerships have led to abundance and even more value for the market and more value for consumers.
Sure. So let's talk about the baking industry for a minute. You know, these partnerships are important, and you realize how important they are when crisis occurs. So when the U.S. economy went into shutdown 3 years ago, here in the United States, the Centers for Disease Control and the FDA said, we're going to shut everything down. So if you shut everything down, you have to remember that people still need to eat, right? Well, they didn't remember that. So essentially, you had the baking industry led at that point by a trade association known as the American Bakers Association. And their immediate past president, Rob Mackey, had created a consortium known as the Food and Baking Industry Alliance. It's an industry alliance around food and baking companies. So when you look at what they did, They were able to go and negotiate worker safety rules and protocols in a way that allowed those workers to keep working at the plant level, at the distribution level, all the way up to the retail store delivery level. But again, when you've got an ecosystem of the food and beverage industry, food, beverage, baking industry, and it's a large alliance, and you unite all these sectors under one banner, you've got the leverage and the ability through those relationships to make a point, because you're representing a significant component of U.S. GDP. People need to listen to you. They especially needed to listen to the food and beverage and baking industries because people needed to eat, and they were highly successful. But that's just one example. I can go over to the recreational boating industry. So when we went into shutdown, factories and plants were closed because the notion was that people weren't going to buy anything, Desmond. But the recreational boating industry called upon its strategic partnerships. The National Marine Manufacturers Association, working with the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation, created a digital marketing campaign that literally went out into the marketplace and told people, hey, obviously we can't go out and network house to house, but we are allowed to go outside and enjoy the great outdoors. And this campaign yielded a dramatic outcome. And you'll love this, being a fellow capitalist. Do you know that the recreational boating industry had double-digit year-over-year sales so significant that they far exceeded every industry expectation after the Great Recession? They thought they would never see volume, sales, and revenues at that level again. But these are just two examples of how this works. These are very powerful, again, relationships that are created in a pre-competitive space. People are looking for the win-win. How do we create that rising tide that will lift all?
Awesome. Boats? So I have to ask you this for entrepreneurs and the business owners out there. So, like, what is your framework of how to develop some of these strategic partnerships? And
Sure. So here's the so if you're an entrepreneur, let's say your business is, you know, 5 to 10 years old, and you're either just within or just past your first inflection point, you've got the opportunity to join a trade association and get on a committee, or potentially even get on the board of directors and utilize the board of directors opportunity to build not an association strategic plan, but an industry strategic plan that you can help shape, one that will shape the external environment in a pre-competitive way, where your company and other companies have the same opportunity to win.
Interesting. And so let's just say that, so are there some examples that you might have of, because I know that this can get pretty deep, but of, let's say, two different companies that serve maybe similar, like they're in the same industry, but maybe they're two different companies doing two different things that maybe come together and essentially, like, 1 + 1 = 2, right? And to a certain degree, right? Where they both, you know, collaborate and maybe and make money. Like, is that pretty common as well?
Sure. So, I mean, here's the beauty of it. You know, there are groups like Vistage and others where people come together and they network and they build relationships and partnerships. And eventually they find ways to do business together. Honestly, the same thing happens on these boards of directors. There are always opportunities that can be identified and leveraged over time. But the important thing is that you get yourself a seat at the table. Don't be sitting in the background. Don't say, oh, I don't have time for that. Because you're missing the next best opportunity. It is the next best opportunity for you and your business. Especially if you're looking to get past that first inflection point, or if you want to get through the second inflection point and you're looking for maybe for new levels of funding.
Let's drill down on that, on new levels of funding, right? So let's unpack that a little bit.
Sure, happy to do it. So look at it this way. So if you're looking for new levels of funding, You would be surprised what happens when you get out in the marketplace and you start networking at things like a trade association. You never know who you run into who maybe want to do a joint venture with you. And that's an opportunity to do something really special. So I want to talk about that for a minute. One of the things I learned as I was researching for my book is how significant strategic partnerships among companies have become. Look at it this way. Not every company wants to merge with another company. However, what if they can do a strategic partnership arrangement between their companies? So the example would be, what if I can get access to market share I don't have? What if I can get access to market leverage or capacity or production capacity that I don't have by doing the strategic partnership? I'll give you an example of what I mean. So I want you to think of the Barnes and Noble bookstores here in the United States. By the way, one of the last standing brick and mortar bookstores. Here's what's interesting about it. So when you go into a Barnes and Noble, first thing you smell is the coffee and the baked goods. So there's a Starbucks in these Barnes and Noble. So for Starbucks, the big win for them, Desmond, was they got access to customers that they wouldn't have had they not done the strategic relationship. For Barnes and Noble, you're pulling people in to your bookstore and getting customers you would not have had otherwise. And it's pretty exciting stuff. And almost always, there's governance and rules that oversee these partnerships to make sure they go well. You want to make sure that you're winning. And winning means, are we clear on what we're doing? Are we clear on what we're going to do if there's a miscue or a misstep, and how we're going to fix it going forward? But ultimately, it's partnerships like that can move the needle far beyond where you are today. So for a venture company or let's say a small company or a mid-sized company, you could find another mid-sized company and do a strategic
Man.
partnership. And in within that strategic partnership, let's say a part you're doing 5 million, you both might end up doing 7.5 million a year or 10 million a year. I mean, this is really exciting
Yeah.
stuff to me. It's
You
really
got me
exciting.
excited. I'm over here about to jump out the chair right now because I'm like, whoa, that was a bomb. That's so like that's like real business nuggets right there. It's like, man, that's so savage. Because it got me thinking.
And Desmond, I don't mean it, but I want to give you the other part of it. So for one of the people I interviewed for my book runs a boating company. And he actually wrote the foreword to my book. His name is Steve Heese. And what he writes in the foreword, and he wrote it himself, he just said, this gives you the opportunity to learn things you don't know today. Learn things you don't know today, and then take them back and apply them to your business to grow your business. And in his foreword, he says, if you're looking to grow your business, if you're looking to grow your business, engage in your industry trade association. This is powerful stuff. It's powerful stuff.
Yeah, this got me thinking with you essentially sometimes you might have to pay for some of these joint ventures. Like for instance, Starbucks is probably paying Barnes and Nobles to be obviously in that space, but they're getting so much more value because they're putting themselves in the midst of traffic and also boosting the value of the store because there's more books. I know it's an example, but you bringing that up is also making me think of all other types of examples. Like there's always a Subway in every Walmart, right?
Or think of the Dunkin' Donuts at the Walmart. Think of the Dunkin' and regardless of the fact that Walmart has its own baked goods and they sell other baked goods in the store, who doesn't want a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee and a fresh baked donut? Who doesn't want or a
But
muffin?
the same thing's also, yeah, I was gonna say the
Again.
same thing's also true in manufacturing certain degree, right? Like if you you provide a certain widget, but certain widget's a part of a bigger collection of things, right? Then you can, position, you know what I mean? Like you can get onto this crazy stuff, right? I'm reading a lot about Michael Porter too right now with in terms of competitive strategies and things like that. It's a great book, highly recommend it, guys. But this is some good stuff. So if you're a business owner out there, entrepreneur out there, obviously, yes, find your associations, find areas where you can access networks of people where you can make win-win scenarios, right? Shape your industry, also do some of these joint ventures. But also sounds like some of the fastest way to grow is by leveraging like with other people, right? Like I think the market share thing is huge. So like if someone has access to a certain audience or market, but they don't provide a certain service that maybe the entire market doesn't need, then maybe you can go in, partner with them. They get a percentage of, you know, you can work out the details of the thing, but it's very interesting the way you what you said. And I think that's something I'm actually going to do tonight. It's like, look at my network.
So it's like this. It's I think capitalism is about winning, but you win more when you embrace a win-win approach.
Yeah.
So when you look, we're in an era of chronic uncertainty, Desmond. We never know when the next shoe is going to drop. And because of that, we want to build these strategic partnerships to fortify our businesses. You know, let's see the strategic partnership as the opportunity to fortify our businesses. You know, I think all too often, again, winning is not about doing it yourself. Winning is about being durable. And win-win gets you durability and it gets you access into markets you wouldn't have otherwise. And I think all too often, you know, we're siloed. You know, we can allow ourselves to be siloed. And I think silo means isolation. Isolation means missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't be any more blunt than that.
It's like,
and what I learned is when I talked to 24 executives for my book, I mean, it was energizing for me. It was fascinating the extent to which they rely on strategic partnerships and then strategic partnerships with their industry trade association. But I would encourage, I do encourage every one of your listeners to identify their industry trade association and to get involved immediately.
Boom. You heard it. Get involved. Group economics. Take advantage of the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, this is so fascinating. It's almost like 50% of 10% is a lot more than 100% of 1% in terms of like market share, right?
Yeah, and again, you're making my point for me. I feel that all too often that if you say, well, you know, my firm partners with a market research firm. And here's what that does. It gives my firm high-level professional market research capabilities. What my firm does is it gives them access to market they wouldn't have otherwise. What their firm does is give my firm higher levels of visibility and credibility it wouldn't have. And all I can tell you is that in the last 3 or 4 years, Potomac Core's revenues have taken off.
Boom.
You know, so again, don't be thinking about the win, be thinking about the win-win.
Yeah.
You want to be durable. You want to be durable and you want to get access to markets you don't have.
And like people wanting to give you business, wanting for you to win because they win, right? Because everyone at the day is, you know, self-interested to a certain degree. But yeah, this was awesome. So before we wrap up, man, I always ask these questions, which is because obviously I'm a traveler and, you know, you're a seasoned vet in the game, right? Entrepreneurship and been in the game. So for you, like, what are three of your favorite places that you've ever visited, right? That cities around the world or countries, like what's your, you know, your top three?
You know, New York City is right at the top because say what you want, it is still the financial and business capital of the world. Some of the smartest people in the world are in New York City. Some of the best business experiences I've ever had are in New York City. So I can start with that, right? I went to college here in the Washington, D.C. area. I met my wife here, and in July, we'll be married 43 years. And the Washington, D.C. area, what's fascinating to me, so for some people, it's about partisan politics. For me, it's about being around the smartest people. And I have the blessed, I'm blessed to be in what is a global melting pot that the smartest people in the world gather here and they exchange ideas, launch ideas, and it's fascinating. A lot of thought leaders in a 25-mile square radius. Notice I didn't say that was Congress or the administration, but there are a lot of really smart people in this area. So I would put those in the top two. And I, when I think of places I've just gotten the best business experiences or I've learned the most, it's New York City and Washington, D.C. It's hard for me to think of anything outside of that. And the third place I would say here in the United States, you know, everybody thinks that we're at the end of history or the end of innovation. We're not even close to that. And for those who haven't spent time, not only with the big companies, but with the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, you're missing a bet. Because when you go and see what's going on out there, it's remarkable, right? It's remarkable. So from my perspective, those would be the three places here in the United States that I found energizing and have had the best business experiences. I've learned a lot. It's contributed so much to my entrepreneurial spirit and growth and made me a far better business
person. New York is like a dream place that I want to live for at least 2 to 3 years. And something about the energy of wanting to just be in the Big Apple.
Oh, the energy is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. My wife and I were just up there over the weekend in New York and in Northern New Jersey. And we just came back saying, oh my God, we can't believe it. We're both originally from New York. I'm from Brooklyn and Queens and she's from Long Island. And when you grow up there and you leave there, you realize how important it was to grow up there. You know, for me, what I loved about New York growing up was the diversity of culture, right? Nobody was the same thing, and it was great. You know, you got to learn about different ethnicity and practices and the way they celebrate their holidays, how people see and think of the world. It's just a great place to grow up. For me, it was a marvelous place.
So interesting. Okay, I'm going to end on this note because I'm once again, I was curious. Love the three places. The first one was New York, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, or Silicon Valley area. Yeah, all those are amazing places. Now I have to ask you this. So what are three places on your bucket list that you're looking, that you would love to go to? They, you know, that like top of your list, three places. Just curious. And we'll wrap up.
So would love to go to Rome. I'd love to go to the Vatican with my wife. I want to go to Ireland. And I've got relatives in Southern Italy and Sicily. So those would be the three places that I would love to go to. Because now I've been to France. I've been to England. I've been to Vienna. I've been to Beijing and Tianjin, China. And I've been to Germany. So I would love to go to Rome, Southern Italy and Sicily.
Amazing.
And Ireland.
Love it. Hey, we all want to do what we want when we want with the people we want, right? That's why we're in business. So, great.
Yeah. So before we close, here's the bottom line. I would love everybody to look at my book. You can find it at amazon.com. It's Reimagining Industry Growth and order it today.
Boom. If people want more information about, you know, your services, can you just kind of give us a quick plug about that?
Sure. So actually, you can go to Potomac. It's Potomac, PotomacCorp.com. That's our website. And our contact information is there. You can find me at dan@PotomacCorp.com, or you can reach my entire team at team@PotomacCorp.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. And please look us
Boom.
Up. We'd love to talk to
love
you.
It, man. This was so fun, man. Like I walked away with something very tangible that I'm actually going to be thinking about and chewing on tonight. So once again, I appreciate you from, you know, sharing some time and sharing some of your knowledge on the show for the audience.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the
program. So guys, Congratulations, you made it to the end. We appreciate you for giving me your most precious resource on the planet, which is your time. And we'll see you at the next campfire. Bye-bye.